This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I'd like to say before we begin that I'm honored to be able to speak these words, and thank you for inviting me. I was so moved by the way Carolyn spoke yesterday, and I was feeling very jealous of the quality of her voice, the softness and gentility of it. And I don't have that. I want that. And I'm just kind of a kid from the Bronx, and I have a kind of coarseness to me that, so I'm glad that Carolyn is next to me on the screen, because I'd like to channel her. So thank you. We can begin now.
Okay. Would you like to start, Mado?
Sure. Chief in goodness. Then the enlightening being, Manjushri, having explained the great virtues of unpolluted, undistorted, pure activity, wanted to bring out the virtues of the aspiration for enlightenment. So he asked the enlightening being, Chief in goodness. Now I have, for the sake of the enlightening beings, explained the purifying practices cultivated by Buddhas in the past. Benevolent one, you too, in this assembly, should expound the supreme virtues of practical application. Then Chief in goodness responded in verse. Very good, benevolent one. You should listen clearly. Those virtues and merits cannot be measured. I will now tell a little, as well as I can, but it will be but as a drop of the ocean. When an enlightening being first determines on the way, vowing to seek and realize Buddha's enlightenment, the virtues therein are boundless, immeasurable, beyond compare. How much the more so, through countless, boundless eons, to fully practice the virtues of the stages and transcendent ways. Even all the Buddhas of the 10 directions together could not fully expound them all. Of such boundless great virtues, I will now tell a little bit.
Like the space trod by a bird's feet, or like a mote of dust of the earth. When enlightening beings determine to seek enlightenment, this is not without cause, not without conditions. Engendering pure faith in the Buddha, teaching, and community, by this they produce a broad, magnanimous mind. Not seeking objects of desire or positions of authority, wealth, personal enjoyment, or fame, it is only to forever annihilate creatures' miseries and to benefit the world that they rouse their will. Always wanting to profit and gladden all beings, they adorn lands and make offerings to Buddhas. Accepting the right teaching, they cultivate its knowledges. To realize enlightenment, they arouse their minds. Deep faith, belief, and resolution, always pure, they honor and respect all Buddhas, as well as their teachings and communities. Making offerings with ultimate sincerity, they rouse their will. Deeply believing in the Buddha and the Buddha's teaching, they also believe in the way traversed by Buddhas to be, and believe in unexcelled great enlightenment. Thereby do enlightening beings first rouse their will. Faith is the basis of the path, the mother of virtues, nourishing and growing all good ways, cutting away the net of doubt, freeing from the torrent of passion, revealing the unsurpassed road of ultimate peace. When faith is undefiled, the mind is pure. Obliterating pride, it is the root of reverence. And the foremost wealth in the treasury of religion being a pure hand to receive the practices. Faith is generous, the mind not begrudging. Faith can joyfully enter the Buddha's teaching. Faith can increase knowledge and virtue. Faith can assure arrival at enlightenment. Faith makes the faculties pure, clear, and sharp. The power of faith is strong and indestructible.
Faith can annihilate the root of affliction. Faith can turn one wholly to the virtues of Buddhahood. Faith has no attachment to objects. Transcending difficulties, it reaches freedom from trouble. Faith can go beyond the pathways of demons and reveal the unsurpassed road of liberation. Faith is the unspoiled seed of virtue. Faith can grow the seed of enlightenment. Faith can increase supreme knowledge. Faith can reveal all Buddhas. Therefore, I'll explain in steps practicing in accord. Faith is most powerful, very difficult to have. It's like in all worlds having the wondrous, wish-fulfilling pearl. If one can always faithfully serve the Buddhas, then one can keep the precepts and cultivate studies. If one always keeps the precepts and practices what one learns, then one can embody all virtuous qualities. Self-control can develop the basis of enlightenment. Study the foundation of cultivating virtues. Always acting in accord with discipline and study. One will be praised for excellence by all enlightened ones. If one always faithfully serves the Buddhas, then one can assemble great offerings. If one can assemble great offerings, one's faith in Buddha is beyond conception. If one always faithfully serves the honorable teaching, then one will tirelessly listen to the Buddha's teaching. If one hears the Buddha's teaching without tiring of it, one's faith in the teaching is inconceivable. If one always faithfully serves the pure community, then one's faith will never regress. If one's faith never regresses, one's power of faith is unshakable.
If nothing can shake one's power of faith, then one gains purity, clarity, and sharpness of sense. If one has purity, clarity, and sharpness of sense, one can avoid bad associates. If one can avoid bad associates, then one can approach good associates. If one can be with good associates, then one can cultivate great goodness. If one can cultivate great goodness, one can perfect great causal power. If one perfects great causal power, then one can attain supremely certain understanding. If one can attain supremely certain understanding, then one will be protected by the Buddhas. If one is protected by the Buddhas, then one can arouse the will for enlightenment. If one can arouse the will for enlightenment, then one can diligently cultivate the virtues of Buddhahood. If one can diligently cultivate the virtues of Buddhahood, then he can be born in the family of the enlightened. If one gets to be born in the family of the enlightened, then one can practice skillful liberative techniques. If one can develop skill in means of liberation well, then one can reach purity of the faithful mind. If one gains purity of the faithful mind, then one can increase supreme will. If one can increase supreme will, then one can always practice the transcendent ways. If one always practices the transcendent ways, then one can fulfill the great vehicle. If one can fulfill the great vehicle, then one can give offerings to Buddhas in the right way.
If one can make offerings to Buddhas in the right way, then one can remember Buddha with unwavering mind. If one can remember Buddha with unwavering mind, then one can always see infinite Buddhas. If one always sees infinite Buddhas, then one sees the essence of the enlightened is eternal. If one sees the essence of the enlightened is eternal, then one can know the truth never dies. If one can know the truth never dies, then one attains unhindered powers of elucidation. If one attains unhindered powers of elucidation, then one can expound boundless teachings. If one can expound boundless teachings, then one can compassionately liberate beings. If one can compassionately liberate beings, then one can attain a mind of unshakable compassion. If one can attain a mind of unshakable compassion, then one can appreciate the most profound truth. If one can appreciate the most profound truth, then one can abandon the errors of fabrication. If one can abandon the errors of fabrication, then one can divorce conceit and indulgence. If one can get rid of conceit and indulgence, then one can benefit all beings together. If one can benefit all beings, then one can be in birth and death unwearied. If one can be in birth and death unwearied, then one can be invincibly brave and strong. If one can be invincibly brave and strong, then one can bring forth great spiritual powers. If one can bring forth great spiritual powers, one will know the activities of all sentient beings.
If one knows the activities of all sentient beings, then one can mature and perfect living beings. If one can mature and perfect living beings, one will attain the knowledge to save all beings. If one attains the knowledge to save all beings, then one can perfect the means of salvation. If one can perfect the means of salvation, then one will give beings unlimited benefit. If one gives beings unlimited benefit, one will fulfill the techniques of supreme knowledge. If one fulfills the techniques of supreme knowledge, one will remain on the heroic, unexcelled path. If one remains on the heroic, unexcelled path, one can crush the power of all demons. If one can crush the power of all demons, one can get beyond the realm of the four demons. If one can get beyond the realm of four demons, then one can reach the stage of non-regression. If one can reach the stage of non-regression, one attains profound acceptance of the non-origination of things. If one attains deep acceptance of the non-origination of things, one will receive the Buddha's prediction of enlightenment. And this is where I want to skip, where it gets into, anyway, pardon me, I'm going to jump to 339. And if you're interested in the section, please, please enjoy it.
Living beings' forms and features are unalike. Their behaviors and sounds are also countless. All of these enlightening beings can make appear by the mystic power of the oceanic reflection meditation, beautifully purifying inconceivable lands, making offerings to all enlightened ones, emanating great light without bound. They liberate sentient beings without limit too. Their knowledge and wisdom is independent and inconceivable. Their speech in explaining truth is unhindered. Their generosity, self-control, tolerance, energy, and meditation, wisdom, skill and means, spiritual powers and such are all likewise free by the power of Buddha's flower garland meditation. They enter concentration on one atom and accomplish concentration on all atoms. And yet that particle doesn't increase. In one are manifest inconceivable lands. Of the many lands in that one atom, some have Buddhas, some do not. Some are polluted and some are pure. Some are large, some are small. Some are forming, some disintegrating. Some are upright, some are sideways. Some are like heat mirages on a vast plain. Some are like Indra's net in the heavens. What in one atom is manifest is also manifest in all atoms. This is the mystic power of concentration and liberation of these sages of great renown. If they want to make offerings to all Buddhas, they enter into concentration and produce mystic transformations, able to reach throughout the universe with one hand to give offerings to all the enlightened ones. The most beautiful flowers in all realms, perfumes, incense, and priceless jewels such as these all emerge from their hands to present to the conquerors under the trees of enlightenment.
priceless jewel raiment with mixed perfumes, precious banners and canopies, all finely adorned with flowers of gold and curtains of jewels. All of these rain from their palms. Whatever wonderful things there be in all realms that may be worthy to offer to the Supreme Honored One, all shower from their palms, all complete, and they bring it to the enlightened trees to offer to the Buddhas. All the artful music of the 10 directions, bells and drums, harps and lyres, various different kinds, all played harmoniously with beautiful tones, all emerges from the enlightening being's palms. All eulogies that be in the 10 directions, praising the virtues of the enlightened ones, all of their various wonderful words are intoned from within their palms. The enlightening being's right hands radiate pure light. Within the light is fragrant water raining from the sky, sprinkling the Buddha lands of the 10 directions as offerings to all the lamps that light the worlds. Also, they emit wondrous arrays of light beams, producing countless jewel lotus blossoms. The colors and forms of the flowers are all superb, and these they present to the Buddhas. They also emit flower garlands of light with all kinds of flowers bunched into drapes, scattered all over the lands everywhere as presents to all the honored ones of great virtue. They also emit lights adorned with perfumes, various wonderful scents massed into drapes, scattered all throughout the lands everywhere as presents to the honored ones of great virtue. They also emit lights adorned with powdered incense, various incenses collected into drapes, and distribute them throughout all worlds as gifts to the honored ones of great virtue.
They also emanate lights adorned with raiment, various fine robes gathered into drapes, and distribute them throughout all worlds as offerings to the honored ones of great virtue. They also emit lights adorned with jewels, various beautiful jewels massed into drapes, and distribute them throughout all worlds as presents to the honored ones. They also produce lights adorned with lotuses, various lotuses assembled into drapes, and distribute them throughout all worlds as gifts to the honored ones. They also emit lights, necklace adorned, various fine necklaces gathered into drapes. They distribute throughout all worlds to offer to the honored ones. They also emanate lights adorned with pennants, radiant with multicolored patterns of all kinds, innumerable, all superbly fine. With these, they decorate the Buddha lands. Canopies adorned with melanges of jewels, draped with finely embroidered flags and crystal chimes intoning Buddha's voices. These they take to offer the enlightened ones. Their hands producing such inconceivable gifts, they present them to a guide and do the same to all the Buddhas with their great psychic powers of concentration. Enlightening beings dwell in concentration, dealing with beings by various abilities, all of them guiding by innumerable means, by the virtuous principles they practice. Some use the approach of offerings to Buddhas. Some use the approach of inconceivable generosity. Some use the approach of austerity and discipline. Some use the approach of unshakable tolerance. Some use the approach of ascetic effort. Some use the approach of tranquil meditation.
Some use the approach of certain thorough knowledge. Some use the teaching of practical expedience. Some use the teachings of the pure abodes and psychic powers. Some use the approach of the benefits of the means of salvation. Some use the approach of the adornments of knowledge and virtue. Some use the teaching of conditioning and liberation, teachings of faculties, powers, and the right path. Some use the teaching of followers' liberation, of purity, of self-awakened ones. Some use the teaching of the freedom of the great vehicle. Some use the teaching of the miseries of impermanence. Some use the teaching of no self and no life. Some use the teaching of impurity and detachment from desire. Some use the approach of extinctive concentration. According to the differences in beings' ailments, they use all teaching medicines to cure them. According to the inclinations of beings' minds, they all use expedients to satisfy them. According to the differences in sentient beings' behaviors, they use adaptive skills to perfect them. The characteristics of such spiritual powers of concentration cannot be fathomed by any gods or men. Having a wondrous concentration called according to actions, enlightening beings abide in this and observe everywhere, appearing as appropriate to liberate sentient beings, causing them to gladly change according to the truth. Where there is famine and disaster in the age, they give means of comfort to all in the world, causing them to be satisfied according to their desires, creating benefit for all sentient beings. They may give away fine food and drink, sumptuous clothing, garlands of jewels, and even a royal throne to cause those who like generosity to accord with the teaching. Adorned with flower garlands, anointed with perfume, with dignified behavior, the liberate beings liked and esteemed by all in the world, their appearance and their garb they adopt as is appropriate to please and cause those who like form to follow the path.
With exquisite voices, like songs of birds, wondrous tones in harmony, complete with all kinds of pure voice, they preach to beings according to their likes. 84,000 gates of teaching do the Buddhas use to liberate beings. And according to the different teachings they use, what's appropriate to liberate. Sentient beings' pains and pleasures, gains and losses, etc. Whatever things are done by beings of the world, enlightening beings can appear to do the same things, whereby to liberate all living beings. The suffering of all worldly beings is deep and wide and boundless, like the sea. Enlightening beings sharing their tasks can tolerate it all to cause them to benefit and gain peace and happiness. If any do not know the way to emancipation and do not seek liberation to leave turmoil behind, enlightening beings show them relinquishment of nation and wealth, satisfaction in detachment and peace of mind. If the home is a place of bondage by attachments, in order to cause sentient beings to all escape trouble, they show home leaving and attachment, an attainment to liberation without craving for any pleasures. Enlightening beings manifest the practice of 10 kinds of action and also practice the ways of great people, including the practices of seers and sages, because they want to benefit sentient beings. If there are beings whose lifespan is immeasurable, whose afflictions are slight and pleasures complete, enlightening beings, being free in their midst, show the suffering of the ills of age, sickness, and death. In the cases of those with greed, hatred, and ignorance, the raging fires of these afflictions always blazing, enlightening beings manifest aging, sickness, and death for them to cause those sentient beings to all be tamed. Doug, is it possible to go to the very end and maybe read the last page?
The last page of book 12?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me find it here.
If not, that's okay.
I can. This is a long chapter, and it's an exquisite one. And there's, but I think...
It just feels like we need, at least I need, some sense of closure to this book.
Sure.
There we go. Great. Thank you, Doug. It's hard to find one with faith in this teaching. If any diligently cultivate pure virtues, by the power of past cause they can believe. Among the creatures of all worlds are few who want to seek the vehicle of Buddha's followers. Those who seek solitary enlightenment are even fewer. And those who aim for the great vehicle are very hard to find. But striving for the great vehicle is still easy compared to the greater difficulty of believing this teaching. Even more difficult it is to retain, recite, and explain it for others. To practice according to the teaching and truly understand it, to hold a galaxy on one's head without moving for one eon, is not to be considered difficult compared to believing this teaching. To pick up 10 Buddha lands in the hand and stand in space through an eon is not to be considered hard compared to believing this teaching. If one provides comforts for an eon to the homes of beings numerous as atoms in 10 lands, his merit is not to be considered supreme. One who believes this teaching is most excellent. Even spending an eon serving Buddhas, as many as atoms in 10 lands, one's merit will be greater, supreme, if one can recite and hold this book. When the enlightening being, chief in goodness, had spoken these verses, the worlds in the 10 directions quaked in 6 ways. The palace of demons was shrouded. The realms of ill ceased. The Buddhas of the 10 directions appeared before him, and each patted him on the head with his right hand and praised him, saying, "Excellent. You incisively explain this teaching, and we all accordingly rejoice."
Carolyn?
I just, for now, I want to say thank you, Mado, for coming around to this end of this book. For me, it was also very important and very beautiful to have this last page.
Yeah, thank you, Mado, for suggesting that too. It's fun to contemplate holding a galaxy on one's head for an eon is easier than getting this teaching.
Chuck?
Mado, I don't know how you've been conditioned to hear your voice, but I would say in each voice its own music.
Thank you.
Yes, it was a beautiful, beautiful voice. Paula.
Yes, again, Mado. I was, maybe it's a thing women do. I was wishing that my voice sounded more like yours, and my eloquence certainly is lacking if I compare. Carolyn, by the end of yours, I was able to finally get rid of my jealousy and say that Carolyn is a wonderful teacher. Mado, you too. Thank you.
Well, pardon me, Paula, but I have you read with me on Tuesday. It just filled this room with light. So thank you.
Maybe we're all doing okay. Maybe we have a little bit notched off of the whatever we're holding our head. It's a little lighter.
Well, one of the special qualities and elements of this sutra is that there are so many voices speaking. And they're all, they all have their special qualities. And so that kind of reflects the multiplicity of voices that's preach the Dharma. It's, yeah. You know, it's so, I mean, the birds have their voices, the trees yeah. have their voices, and each one of us has our special voice that that brings the Dharma to beings who have a fondness for hearing a certain kind of voice. So It's wonderful. That's Sangha.
Yeah.
Sangha.
Just to say, respond to that also, something I would like to say is that in the last chapters, and I have the other ones tucked away, you know, done, but the last few, well, I guess probably all the ones we've read, they're asking someone else, one of their fellow beings, to enlighten them on another aspect. And they each have their areas of expertise, I guess, including this one, Chief of Goodness. So I feel like I've really benefited by the teaching, your teaching, all of you.
So what is so hard about this teaching? What is so incredibly difficult about accepting this teaching, holding it, reciting it, and offering it? This last section suggests how really incredibly hard. We can't even imagine how hard it is. So what do you have any sense of what's so hard about this? Chuck?
I mentioned something the other day about open and closed systems. And I think the way we're, come back to that word conditioned a lot, I think how we're conditioned suggests how, or is an insight, I think, into what we hear and what we don't hear, what we can accept, what we can allow in and not allow in. In my own experience, it's interesting, you know, picking up a teaching and at one point in time, and then after a while, putting it down. I had this experience about 10 years ago with the flower garland scripture. Dean Williams and I took it up together. And then after a while, we sort of petered out with it. But now going back into it, it's a different person going back into it and hearing it differently. And it's and parts of it are able to come in differently. Going back to this phrase that I heard a year or so ago, gathering and folding in, you know, it's where does something come in during the gathering and folding in that it is one able to hear it or not? I think there's also just a natural, you know, in this chapter in particular, some of the language was striking me at a you know, kind of abruptly. I had this reaction to some of the language, and so there is this resistance came up to it. So I wonder about, you know, our cultural and other kinds of conditionings and how it hears language, some of this language. Um, and how we hear each other. You know, again, you know, how do we, you know, the other day, I like this, somebody's phrase, I can't remember who said it, it's like intersecting. And, you know, this intersecting and then beginning to go into it and explore. So it's not just a matter of, you know, so the resistance, I think, is natural. We have this, you know, we just resist. Not everything, but some, you know, a lot of stuff we do. We got this natural resistance. It's to go into the resistance, into the, you know, to this moment of intersecting and explore it. And explore the nature of the resistance. That's you know, it's like, it's another Dharma gate. And then, you know, what I've been reading, I'm still exploring this, you know, I touched into the dynamics of what they, you know, I was reading this book on, you know, on the what they call the bilateral hemispheres of the brain, what the so-called right and left brains. It's just a natural tendency of the so-called left brain to not let in what it's not, what doesn't sound familiar in the first place. So it's that, that coming back to that, that I think that resistance is a natural phenomena in us. It's just the way we are.
Pamela.
Thank you for the reading, Doug and Mado. I was really struck by two things. One is, Mado, your question is, what makes it so difficult, so impossibly difficult? And it struck me to look back at a few paragraphs earlier where the sutra talks about how we have to be invincibly brave and strong. And this is a hard practice. I think it's really hard to be with these teachings because we have nothing to hold on to when we're with these teachings, including the teachings. There's nothing to grasp at. You know, it's letting everything be. And that requires, I think, invincible bravery and strength. And I think it's a tall order. I've been thinking this a lot during this session, that this is a tall order that we've undertaken to be courageous. But I think it's a rare bird that can sing this song.
This is Paula again. This will be the last time I say anything. Yesterday I put a note saying, don't talk before discussion, because then I think about it afterwards. But this, I noticed that, and I don't know where it starts, but it seems to go on. Yeah, it's like a cause and effect thing for a long time there. If you know this, then you can do that. If you, and it's all to save other people. If you do this, you do that. And I, when I was, you know, really a righteous and self-righteous younger practicer of Zen, going to all the sessions and so on, and hoping, was speaking, we had this place up in near Ukiah. We didn't own it, of course, this was Santa Cruz Indo, but there was a group of people in Ukiah, just like four or five people that knew Coben from earlier, probably from Los Altos. Anyway, he was talking about, at one point, he just talked about his mother. I think it was being a Christian, and I think it was I thought, well, it must be his mother-in-law. But then, you know, because his mother was the wife of a Zen master. But it could have been his own mother. Anyway, he praised the faith of his mother. And I was like, humph, you know. Being brought up Christian, I did have faith, not in the teachings so much. I mean, they were kind of in the teachings, but not in the way that I was disparaging about other people. So anyway, I just said, well, I wish I had faith. And it probably said it pretty with that attitude too. Not that bad. Anyway, he said, I hope that you can. And I think finding that faith in the teachings, then that was years, you know, decades ago. that was an opening. And so then reading this, I think became another opening that I can have faith in this. It's simply that most of this, I think as Peter said, this kind of knowledge we got from Coben, but he didn't state it explicitly of what we should learn. As Peter said, he said, you don't have to learn this. I will tell you, you know, I will tell you the teachings, and they were all there. So having them, since they'd all been there, I can recognize them now and see that is the cause and effect. And what can you do if you don't have faith? And the way that they were all passing on their fields, you know, to each other. So what can you do if you don't have the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha to know? And that's been it's been enormously beneficial. I said beneficial already. I feel like we're following along together, and we can ask each other for help. That's it. Thank you.
Bomb.
No. Hi, Doug.
Okay. I was going to agree with Paula about that passage with the sort of if-then passage being one place where it would be hard, where it would be difficult. If one has purity, clarity, sharpness of sense, one can avoid bad associates. And if one can avoid bad associates, then one can approach good associates. But it can be hard to avoid bad associates. I mean, I like my bad associates. But each little step in that whole long list of steps is a challenge, and to go all the way through them all it's challenging. I guess that's what I want to say. If one attains supremely certain understanding, then one will be protected by the Buddhas. Then one can arouse the will for enlightenment. I mean, maybe that's not so hard. Anyway, thank you. Thanks very much. It was This has been really wonderful readings every day. So and talks. So thank you very much.
Carolyn. Carolyn, did you want to?
Yes, thank you. I too feel the great benefit of this being together. And at Rohatsu, it really struck me what an appropriate sutra to read. And ending with this one, choosing these books, and ending with this one, very, very powerful and directly entering. And these passages, what people have said so far, everyone, Pamela and Tom and Chuck and Paula, about Mado's beautiful, brilliant question, what's so hard? Many resonances about the if-then. Also, when I first started reading those, and I'm thinking, okay, this is that part, to use Chuck's, use what Chuck brought in, the left brain, this if-then, this cause and effect, this kind of, but as going through this, the parts that we did go through of this book, it came to me that it's more like a mandala, and it's more like Indra's net, which is also mentioned here. It's more like everything. It begins with faith and it ends with faith. It begins with faith and ends with faith. And so that question that Paula brought in, what is faith, seems to me to be really central and huge here. And there are all these pieces of faith, but that in, so the mandala for me is, a mandala is kind of like, it's not just a flat dimensional thing. It's almost like a vortex, and it goes down to a center, which disappears. And that's where that mysterious thing is, that's faith, that resides, that, and how can we summit it? And why is it so hard that we have to have an eon on our heads? I don't have an explanation. I'm just describing what came into my mind. But it kind of makes sense that it's about faith. And that's what's gonna hold it together. And of course, there's always periods like Tom, like Chuck talked about, like when you lose the, you pick things up. So, thank you.
This brings to mind an experience I had very recently, and I think Taizan may recall this, and I don't know whether Jiro is still here, but the three of us had a little adventure in Japan a couple of months ago, and we went up to Mount Hiei, where we were privileged to attend a fire ceremony, which was the, remember this, Taizan? Which was the culmination of the practice of what is called a marathon monk. I don't know whether any of you have heard of the marathon monks of Mount Hiei. You can look them up online. They are a remarkable group of men. And they have a 12-year intensive practice on the mountain. They cannot leave the mountain for 12 years. And they have a practice of circumnavigating the mountain in 100 days. In these ragtag sandals that they're practically worn out. And it's a very demanding practice. And if they cannot complete it, they have to kill themselves. And there are graves along the mountain paths of monks who didn't make it. I think in the history of this, I'm not sure how many thousands of years this has been going on, but there have only been 40 monks who have made it through this intensive 12-year practice. And we were privileged to have tea with this monk who was one of those who made it. And we were able to ask him questions. And of course we were all in awe of him. And there was a translator. And I guess the question that I asked him was, why does practice have to be so hard? It was 12 years of this incredible practice. So my question was, why does this have to be so hard? And he passed this on to the monk, and the monk smiled and looked at me and said, what makes you think it's so hard? I've never forgotten that, and I never will. It was like a dagger, a good one, a good one, to sort of wake me up. And this kind of brings in the whole notion of faith. That is, for him, he had complete confidence, complete dedication to what he was doing. And to him, it wasn't hard. But to us, with that resistance that Chuck mentioned, with probably a lack of absolute confidence, this continual doubt that makes so many people leave the practice, without that, it's a piece of cake. 12 years is not hard when you're acting out of faith, when you're acting out of confidence. So that was such a profound teaching for me. That one question, which I just recalled, probably the reason I asked the question to all of you is because it's been with me since that moment that I was asked the question. So there, put that on top of your heads. Let's share it together.
Just as a side note, interesting point of that was, it's a Tendai center there, and it's the place where Dogen went initially with that question. If we already have Buddha nature and if we're already enlightened, why do we practice so hard? Why do we have to do anything? This is the kind of ironic thing about this. And he went to the different practice leaders there, and none of the answers satisfied him. And finally, he was told, you need to go to China. And there, you will find the answer. But it's kind of ironic that he asked, if we're already enlightened, why do we have to do these difficult practices? And as Mado said, the practice that they've stuck with is this incredible marathon of difficulty. And so anyway.
Chuck, did you have something?
Yeah, this word faith and doubt. So doubt is one of the hindrances, the skeptical doubt. But there is another kind of doubt that's what we've been talking about turning in. What's this? What's this about? In working with the Satipatthana Sutta and then I've been working with my groups with this very slender book by Gil Fronsdahl, Unhindered. And there's for me in there, there's an insight into faith. It's a little bit more accessible, I think. So in the Satipatthana Sutta, there is this refrain in there that noticing when things are like this and when they're not. And that's very strong. It's a very strong presence in this book, Unhindered. Fronsdahl uses the word appreciation in his acronym Bella, A being appreciation when a hindrance falls away, and seeing that it works. So essentially, in the Satipatthana Sutta, we've come to see that this stuff works from our own direct experience. It's not something that we have to rely on words from others. It's our own direct experience of it works. When even if it's just for a moment of liberation, of unhindering from our conditioned states, and we take that in, coming back to the implicit explicit memory, we take that in and the being remembers it. That yeah, there and this for me, this is my sense of faith, this is what I've come into, is it works because it's been tested, it's been put to the test, and the being experiences these little moments of liberation. There may be big moments of liberation. The being experiences the little moments of liberation over and over and over, and it. That's where faith comes from for me in this practice, because it works. It's not, you know, it's not something out here. It's something that can be realized. So thank you.
Kodo Suwaki, one of the things he talks about is the importance of continuity of attention. When continuously attentive, then you take one step and you take a next step and you take the next step, and pretty soon you're around the mountain. And I wonder if just trusting in that continuity of attention gives a broad basis for this faith.
Well, I would just introduce the possibility that it may be at exactly the moments of doubt and the breaking of the continuity of attention that confidence needs to be invoked. That it's at those moments that this faith, I hesitate to use the word faith because it comes with all the baggage. But when I speak to students who come bored or reaching a plateau or it's not working or whatever doubt they are bringing with them, that this sense is to invite them to have confidence at exactly those times when it doesn't seem like it's working. it's always nice when it does work, but it's at the times when it doesn't seem to be working that confidence is critical, that faith is critical. So it's just another dimension to this theme of faith.
I want to thank you for bringing that in. And it brought to mind, along with Chuck's reflections, a couple of things. But immediately, Stephen Batchelor's book, The Faith to Doubt, which is a very wonderful little treatise through Stephen's lens of how that can work in practice, how that can, and he had gone through a lot of doubt periods and still does, apparently, according to what he writes. But he always returns to, in a way, to this path in his way. And also, I want to acknowledge how those times of, for me, when the doubt comes up, it is when it's not working, and yet recognizing with the foundations of mindfulness, particularly that these are conditioned places, and yet we do have the capacity. A word from Coben's writings come up to trust. You need to trust, even though you can't see it or feel it, or your regular practices seem to be failing you. That is a bit of a mystery to me, how that gets, that seed somehow is planted in us some point along our lives, and we learn to trust that that seed will come up, even though it's taking 18 days to germinate, or 54 in the case of some trees or whatever. So.
Could I ask Taizen and Mado, is, were you saying that this mountain, the mountain of the Marathon Monks, that is where Dogen went asking his question about if we're all enlightened, why do we need to practice? It was right there? Ah, wow. Thank you. So much.
You know, the thing about courage and faith too, you think about that, Dogen took that trip to China at a time when it wasn't about, you know, getting on a nice luxury liner or flying in an airplane. It was a very precarious journey. And during the time when, you know, when he was going to the different temples and he wasn't being satisfied, he was, from what I've read, he was very discouraged. And, you know, think about the faith too, without having that, without having everything in place. So in some ways it was a faith kind of from the inside of something near but unseen, you know, like we've been saying, it's not seen yet, but there's a feeling that there's something here, there's something near, And that alone is enough to for people that really have that, I guess you'd call it bodhicitta. Wouldn't that be the definition of that? Just wanting to know, wanting to understand so desperately and being willing to do, to go to that kind of a length. And I think about that sometimes, you know, when I'm complaining about something in my life, some minor thing that, oh my gosh, I'm so spoiled. My comfort zone is like about 2 inches wide. Oh, it's a little too hot, it's a little too cold, or I'm a little too, you know. Oh my gosh, you think about what our ancestors and our great people from the past have endured. It's really a wonderful, wonderful reminder for me.
Michael?
Yes, I guess. Thank you for the talk. Appreciate it. I always like listening to you speak. I guess I would have faith. You know, I mean, the story of the monk, I mean, I can understand walking around the mountain. You know, that's just their thing. You know, a lot of monks have something to empty the mind. But the committing suicide is just, and I don't understand. That's ludicrous to me. I mean, it's like the opposite of what's the whole thing is about, but I don't know mind. And that part, I don't know. And, you know, for me to condemn it is kind of ridiculous because I don't have an understanding. There's something there that I'm just not getting, I'm sure. And that's where the faith comes in. You know, I think that I have faith. I mean, you all been studying this stuff for years. And so there's something there that I'm just like this novice on a tricycle. I don't get it. I still have my training wheels, you know. I don't get a lot of it. And I certainly don't get that part. It just, that striving seems to be, well, what I read, the striving seems to be the opposite of what you want to do. But I don't know. I just don't know. And I guess I have faith. I'll stick around and just keep my ears open. And try not to be judgmental, you know, and just keep coming around. There's something here, I'm sure, you know. Thank you.
Nico, did you have something to say?
I'm not sure. I find the idea of, did I hear correctly that of all the thousands of years where they were doing this mountain 12-year retreat, only 40 people survived it? It sounds like it's a death cult for suicidal monks and spiritual strivers to go and take care of the things that they can't do in polite society. I don't know. I don't want to say anything too rude, but it strikes me as a lot of, it just strikes me as a lot of religious fanaticism. I don't really see anything particularly admirable about it. Sorry.
I see something.
Glad to hear from you.
Is it okay if I say something?
Sure. Is that okay, Doug? We're over time, but.
We're way over time, but let's keep going. It's too good. Keep going. Kaveh.
I certainly don't have this kind of faith, certainly. But I would just say a couple of things. The way I relate to that is, one, for us it's difficult to fathom because we're taking it in our cultural, you know, context. But this is a lineage for them. They're honoring their ancestors by doing this. I remember when I was a kid, I don't remember which Olympics it was, I think it was 1976 or 1972. Japan's, this stayed with me all these years, I was very young. Japan's gymnastic team was going for the gold medal in the Olympics. And one of the gymnasts is still on the internet someplace. I saw it a few years ago because I had broken his leg. And he decided, and they didn't shoot him up. And he just had a soft cast because he had to go on the high rings and he had to do the high rings. It gives me goosebumps to this day. And he nailed his landing. I just remember when he nailed his landing, he just lifted his broken foot. He winced and he smiled at the same time. And his teammates came and they lifted him up and they won the gold medal. So, I mean, I don't have this kind of faith, but, you know, that's in their culture. And another thing is, for me, like, when I have doubt, and several times I've left the practice, came back, left teachers, came back, said never again, came back. You know, I pray to Suzuki Roshi. For me, I pray to Suzuki Roshi. When my father died, I prayed to Suzuki Roshi. So I, if I don't have it, I pray from somewhere else to bring it to me. So maybe that's religious or... Oh, and I saw him years later. He's an old man. He teaches kids. This gymnast, he teaches kids how to do gymnastics. And he's the most down to earth. They interviewed him. He's the most lovely man, this hero. They don't even know him in Japan that much, the young generation. I forgot his name.
Well, may we find inspiration in these vigorous practicers that are examples for us, circumambulating mountains and running marathons and pursuing just excellence to as far as they can extend it. May it encourage all of our practice. Thank you, Mado, and everyone for this nice session.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.